We are back. This is the Impact Program on KLOS. My name is Frank Sontag. In studio, I have Benjamin Krem, and we will be taking phone calls in just a little while. If you need more information, I'll get a phone number for you in a moment. I know you can always call the Tara Center, which is in the 818 area code 785-6300. 818-785-6300. Benjamin, on the break, I had mentioned to you that you were just in New York, and I asked you how your visit to New York went, especially in light of the tragedy of last September. What was it like?
Well, it was very good. New Yorkers are beginning to come out of their fear response to the tragedy. It's still there. I mean, I only see a certain number of people, and they are interested in on a wider scale, so they're not so. And I didn't meet anyone who was directly involved in the tragedy. I remember the tragedy very vividly. I was on holiday at the time in England, and on that Tuesday I was in a shop and I heard it on the radio and didn't pay a lot of attention. It wasn't a very good radio receiver, and then I went into another shop and I heard it again, and it began to take shape. And I went home and then I watched the television, and it was just horrific. For 3 days, I was cocooned in a kind of untouchable state, an unreal sort of state, protected by Maitreya. And I learned later that that's what he had done to the people on the planes, for instance, who were inevitably going to crash into the building, to the people in the building who jumped out of windows, who crashed and got out down the stairs. And my master said that his energy had surrounded them and cocooned them and distanced them from the event, so that they were able to watch it with an extraordinary composure and objectivity and detachment. And certainly the reports that we had were people on the plane through cell phones were talking with their husband or their wife and so on, knowing that this was going to happen, were extraordinarily detached. It was quite marked. And the suffering apparently was very, very little. And the state I was in for these 3 days after the event was very similar, I think. I mean, I wasn't going through the event at first hand, but the feeling was one of detached, but experiencing it, but being detached from the fear, from the trauma of it. And I think that probably the people directly involved have not had the trauma. I think the trauma is for the onlookers who are responding to the idea of it. Not, but for the grace of God, I might have been in that building and so on. You know, I think there's more of that. The people are very much, probably much more concerned now by the stock exchange and the crashing of the stock exchange and what's happening to their pensions and so on. And their savings, you know, people. I saw an interview with one man who had lost £450,000 worth of investments, and he was left now with $25,000 worth. He didn't seem bitter, but he was pretty sad about it.
For some, almost their whole life savings.
Oh, absolutely. And yet, it takes that to bring humanity face to face with reality. We in the developed world have no idea what it's like in some parts of the rest of the world. The gap is so vast, we can't imagine that people are living. I mean, millions of, over a million, 1,200 million people are living on less than $1 a day. I mean, we think it's impossible. You can't live on a dollar a day. They're living and dying on a dollar a day. And that's not nothing. I mean, it's a fifth of the world's population. That's the reality, and it's very, very difficult for people living very well indeed in the developed world to take this, to countenance it and to do anything about it, to feel it's their responsibility. But it is. You know, it is our responsibility that they suffer as they do. We would not be so rich. We would not be so well off. We wouldn't eat so well. We wouldn't live so well if it were not for globalization, which is driving the rest of the world into penury. It benefits a few people, but it's terrible for the many. And that's what we're doing, and we're complacent about it because we don't understand. We really, on the whole, do not understand what we're doing. Corporations put vast sums, millions of dollars, into various factories and developments in the third world, and employ some people to produce the goods, which then sell around the world. But the profits from that, over 90% of the profits go back to where they came from, in America, of Britain, of France, of Germany, of Japan. Those with the money, the corporation, doesn't help the underdeveloped country. Just a tiny little section of it. It's blind. It's a blind, greedy usurping of the world. The only thing that will stop that is when the apparent wealth of the third world, of the developed world, goes down the drain, and that's what's happening. Then we see reality. We see what it's really like. And then we can change. Then we will accept the changes which are inevitable. We have to learn to share the resources of the world. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a world.
Would you like to take some phone calls?
Certainly, okay. Yes. Pleasure.
Sarah, you are on the air on KLOS with Benjamin Krim.
Hi, Benjamin. I get the Emergence newsletter.
Oh, very good.
And I thought maybe you should mention that to people so they can get it as well.
Well, yes, you could mention it. Why not? Here you are. Be my guest.
The other thing is, there are two things, actually. The fact that in this country we have 2 million people in prisons, I wonder if you can address that. There's a nation right there. And the other thing is, I was delighted, and every day when I listen to the market report, I am delighted when it goes down. I just jump in the air and go, yes!
You must be very popular.
I'm not popular at all. I'm actually a recluse. I have very few friends. But the idea is that it is time to wake up, and that's my feeling, and I'm really delighted that that's happening. The other thing is since it is happening, does that mean that Maitreya is imminent in appearance here?
So I'm told. In fact, because of the events that are taking place, not only the collapse of the economy, but the cavalier fashion in which your administration is addressing quite problems which are real, but which are nothing like the importance of the financial happenings for millions and millions of people in the world, has brought Maitreya into the world sooner than was thought, and will bring him more openly in the world, out into the open, more quickly than probably would have been the case. So it is certainly, I'm told, imminent. Whatever imminent means to a master, I mean, they think in 2,000-year cycles, so I don't think it will be. I mean, don't hold your breath, but it is imminent indeed, yes.
Sarah, thank you for the call. Mark, you are on the air on the Impact Program with Benjamin Krim.
Yeah, hi, Benjamin. This is Mark. I just wanted to ask you a quick question. Basically, you've been talking about these masters as people that have shown themselves through the centuries as people that have impacted the world stronger than any others, or at least shown significant impact in our lives as humanity. And my question is that I think we should all agree that Bill Gates has impacted our world tremendously, and I'm wondering if he's a master, if you consider him a master, since his impact is probably going to be the most far-reaching impact of any previous people we've seen in the last 100 years at least.
Well, there's a quick answer to that. No, he's not a master.
Well, how do you define that? I'm wondering. Another quick question I had was, you'd mentioned that he's coming sooner than he would expect, but if there's no time, and that time runs parallel to him, past and present, then how would he not know of these things and know that that he needs to come?
Oh, that's why he's here. He does need to come, and he's here, but there are certain laws which govern his action, which he knows, and I'm afraid we don't pay much attention to. Above all, the will governing our free will. He may not infringe our free will, and this is governed by law, and this makes it imperative that whatever he does not infringe that law. So he is planning and hoping that certain things will happen, and they don't always happen. They will happen, but not necessarily in the time scale, because the masters don't work in time. So they have to relate what they are saying, what they are seeing and know to be taking place, to our sense of time. They have to put it into a time frame, which is sort of elastic. It's not accurate.
Mark, I thank you for the call this morning. Benjamin, could you talk just for a moment about not necessarily just the concept of fear, but I know there are some fundamentalists that have a bit of issue with your information, that somehow the Antichrist is amongst us, or will come back at a time, and there's a lot of fear and confusion about some of the information that you share. Could you address that?
Yes, well, many fundamentalists have already asserted that Maitreya is the Antichrist. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are quite definite about it. They think he's the Antichrist. They say he's the Antichrist. They firmly believe he's the Antichrist. This, without seeing him, without meeting him, without knowing anything about him, except what I say, and I say nothing that could suggest he would be the Antichrist. I mean, this is a man who embodies the Christ principle, who is the embodiment of love on this planet, who has nothing but unconditional love for every single member of humanity, including all the fundamentalist Christians who exist. And the fundamentalist every other religion who exists, all the fanatics of every religion are loved unconditionally by Maitreya. In a way, we find it hard to imagine, but if you embody the Christ principle, that is your attitude. To Maitreya, there is no barrier between himself and us. None at all. The barrier's on our side. But from his point of view, we are one. And he doesn't see himself as even being higher. He doesn't expect or want to be worshipped, because if we worship him, we are putting him above us. He said, I'm not above you. I'm exactly at the same point. There's only one divinity and we all share it. So there's no up or down, there's no higher or lower from his point of view. So you'll see a man of extraordinary humility. But to be called the Antichrist, and he will be called the Antichrist, to his face he will be called the Antichrist. I don't know what he'll say, but I can tell you this, that there's a total confusion about who and what the Antichrist is. It is usually thought to be, it's in Revelations of St. John, where the beast 666 is released for a time and then unchained and unchained for a time, and then chained down for a time and half a time. And he's seen to be a man who will come into the world and offer the world, offer the moon to humanity, and he is really the devil incarnate, the opposite of the Christ. They see him as against the Christ. The Antichrist is something quite different. It is, in the first place, not a man. It is an energy. An energy, a destructive energy, embodying the evil of all humanity from the very beginning of our incarnation on this planet. And all the misdeeds, all the evil, all the ungood that we have done and will go on doing for a time, is embodied in that energy. That is deliberately released to break down the old order, the old dispensation. It's in St. John's Revelations, and he was writing about his own time as well as a future time. And in his own time, that energy was released through the Emperor Nero to bring about the destruction of the Roman dispensation to prepare the way for Christendom. It was released again in our time through Hitler, a group of very evil men around him, six other deeply evil men in Nazi Germany, together with a group of militarists in Japan and a further group around Mussolini in Italy. And these three groups who made the Axis in the world, the Axis powers, Germany, Italy, Japan, in the war with the Allies, embodied that energy which we call the Antichrist. Behind the Allies stood the masters of our spiritual hierarchy under Maitreya, and through these three groups, this Antichrist energy was released and caused the war. They precipitated the war, which has been going on the astral plane for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, which came above ground in 1914, went below ground in 1918, came up again in 1939, was precipitated onto the physical plane by Hitler and co., and by their defeat is now the forces of evil, as we call it, are defeated for the time being. They're not destroyed. They have to be chained down again for a time and half a time. That time is the coming 2,500 years of the age of Aquarius, which is just beginning. And half a time, half of the following age, the age of Capricorn. Then the beast will be released once again, this Antichrist force, and there will be another great war in the middle of the age of Capricorn, which will take place on mental levels and will end in the complete destruction of what we call the forces of evil or the Antichrist force on this planet. These forces have a role to play. They are on the involutionary arc. And if they would only keep their action to that level, there would be no evil involved. They're on the evolutionary arc, and their role is the upholding of the matter aspect of the planet, which is lawful and right. But their activity overflows onto the evolutionary arc, where we are, and it's inimical to our spiritual progress. So it has to be countered, and is countered, in fact, by the masters of the spiritual hierarchy under Maitreya. And now they have to be sealed off, and that means sealed off to their own domain, upholding the matter aspect. And this is done by lifting humanity above the level where they can be contacted and used by the forces of evil. And this means that they are bereft of any help on up from humanity, and they can't control and enthrall humanity as they have done for thousands of years. And that is the work of the Christ, Maitreya, and his group of masters in this coming 2,500 years.
Benjamin, do you mind if we take a couple more calls? It's getting late.
Oh, by all means.
Okay. Yeah. Robert, you are on the air on Impact with Benjamin Krim.
Hi, Benjamin.
Hi.
I was asking, and I think Frank already explained it a little bit, or you explained it a little bit, but it sort of flies in the face of me, and I don't call whoever you believe is Maitreya, this man. My question is that, you know, this is something that would be portrayed as one of the Antichrists, because it says in the book that there's many, right, and the teachings of the Bible and other teachings that I've gone through. And in my teachings, what I was taught is that Christ now is not this physical form, but his people with him as the spiritual head. And I believe that Antichrist is sort of the same, same embodiment, just more not death to self, not self-seeking, but basically, you know, you don't have to live a moral life. Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
No, I'm sorry, I'm not really following you, but do go on, do explain it.
Okay, well, what I'm saying is Christ now, the one that lives, is his people, and it says that thou shall know them by the love for each other.
Yes. And in other words, you're talking about the Christ in us.
The Christ now.
Yeah, well, the Christ...
The Christ that lives now is his people, the anointed people.
Well, it's more than that, I would say. I would say that the Christ principle, the Christ consciousness, is now strongly embodied in humanity as a whole. But this is only possible, this has only come about through the effective work of the being who is the Christ, who embodies that Christ principle in his being, who is so evolved and so pure that he can actually embody in his own being that principle, that love of God. And this is on planet Earth, which is not a very advanced planet. I mean, this is an unusual, I don't know if it's unique, but it is a very unusual and rare happening that a planet of our level should be able to produce a Christ. So we're not talking about nothing here, we're talking about an extraordinary cosmic thing. And that quality, because of his embodying that energy, that enables humanity, those who can respond to him, who have the love of God in their hearts, to make it possible for him now to return to the world. He comes because humanity is ready. He also comes because humanity has called him. And he also comes to help humanity, prevent humanity from destroying itself, which your president looks intent on having done. That is an extraordinary situation.
Robert, I thank you for the call. You know, Benjamin, a number of months ago, our president, as you say, enjoyed an enormous popularity rating. It's beginning to go down a bit. I think there are more Americans that are starting to question what he's really all about. And we'll leave it at that, because I want to take a few more calls. David, you're on the air with Benjamin Krim on KLOS.
Hello, Mr. Krim. It's nice to speak to you.
Thank you.
But I guess I'm one of those silly people that does think you're under the influence of a dark power. And I'm very sorry to think that, but...
That's all right.
No, can I lay a metaphor on you? At the end of the world, the Christians, and I am a Christian, I'll give that to you so you know where I'm coming from. At the end of the world, they say Christ will ride a white horse.
Yes.
And I think it's interesting that the Hindus believe that Vishnu's next avatar is a white horse.
Yes. So,
and his last one was a fish. But, but anyway, the so-called four horsemen of the apocalypse, the first one rides a white horse with a bow, no arrows are mentioned, and he wears a crown, but it's a Stephanos, the laurel wreath given to an athlete who had, you have to win it, the point is. It has to be earned. It's not a diadem. That's another word for crown, which we still have in our language. A king would wear a diadem. A winner would wear a Stephanos. And this is in Revelations. But The man of sin is mentioned many times. It is a man. I don't know if he's the Antichrist, though the previous caller said many will come and say, here is Christ, and we've got him over here, and we've got him over there. And I do fear for your safety, because, you know, Satan is an angel of light. That's one of his names. And if he is transfigured, his ministers are transfigured. I do believe in the ascended masters. Absolutely I do. I believe there's some of those mentioned in Psalm 82. It's a psalm no one ever reads. It's only 8 verses long, but God bless you and God protect you. And I don't know what else to say except the line in Oh God, You Devil, where the guy sees George Burns as God and the devil. He sees him as God, having seen him as the devil, and he says, hey, you look like him, speaking to God. And God says, no, he tries to look like me.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. I'm grateful for your good thoughts and protection, and we just agree to disagree.
Thank you, David. Keith, you're on the air on KLOS with Benjamin Krim.
Hi, Frank.
Hi, Keith.
Hey, good. And Benjamin, hello, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Keith.
Good. I have a simple question that's really bothering me. I belonged to a temple years ago, and the rabbi, which in the LA Times announced that Moses was a myth. And this is a prominent religious spiritual leader. And, you know, I'm troubled with that. And, I mean, if you say that Moses is a myth, then it kind of like the domino effect goes into effect. So, Benjamin, my question to you is, you know, when you have a spiritual leader who can say that perhaps Moses is a myth, is that not, when you think about the fact that you have a congregation filled with people with personal problems, cancer, whatnot, dying, is that not intrinsically evil?
Oh, no, I wouldn't think so at all. It's maybe ignorant, but ignorance is not the same as evil. He's ignorant. He doesn't know whether Moses lived or didn't live, or lives or doesn't live. And he should say that instead of saying he doesn't. It's a myth. That is a very bad piece of thinking, let alone thinking of a rabbi. I'm just surprised to hear it. It's the first time I've ever heard it. Although there are many, or some at least, bishops in the Christian Church in England, Church of England, who might say, if pushed, and there were no media present, that they had certain doubts about the fact of whether Christ actually lived, and did it matter if he did or he didn't, because we have these ideas and so on. I'm absolutely convinced that Jesus lived, and that for 3 years of his life he was overshadowed by the Christ. I take that with absolute truth. It's not a mystery to me. It's not something extraordinary, although it is a wonderful thing. But I've got to believe in it as a not a thing that happens every day, but a thing that happens every 2,000 years, or has done up till now, and maybe will stop now because we have the Christ himself in our midst. So it's things move on.
Thank you, Keith. We appreciate the call. We'll go back to Yafet. You're back on the air on KLOS.
Okay. I have a question just about conversation I had with my mom tonight. Basically, it was, you know, a little bit of arguing about how I was raised. And from my knowledge, you know, of reading the Bible, little as I do, which is bad, but that you're not supposed to lash back at your parents. And, you know, I just don't know what's going on, you know. I mean, I've been trying to follow the word, and it was kind of funny that I scrambled through the radio and happened to stop at the station, and this is my first time really ever, you know, listening to the station. And I just thought maybe I'd ask you that question, see what you had to say.
What is your question?
No, my question is, you know, like, you know, like, just about when I was talking back to my mom, you know, I mean, or, you know, in the Bible, you're not supposed to, like, talk to your mom and your parents bad.
Well, I mean, do you think your parents know everything about everything? I think one has to respect one's parents, but you don't have to believe everything they say, and you don't have to do everything that they ask you to do or tell you to do. Likewise with each other, you have to respect everybody, but you don't have to believe everything everybody says, and you don't have to do what other people want you to do. You're yourself, and you have to make up your own mind, and that's you, and they have to accept that you're an individual soul like they are, and you have as much right to your attitude and thoughts and ideas and meaning of life as they have, but you have to pay them respect as your parents. You wouldn't be there but for them.
Thank you, Yafet. Our last caller is Palma. You're on the air on the Impact Program with Benjamin Krim.
Well, greetings. I'm just driving in from Arizona, and I'm so thrilled that I, like your last callers, just happened to catch KOLS coming into L.A., and I'm thrilled to hear about this man, person, I don't know, really a master, you're saying, Maitreya. I've gotten the website. Can you tell me the age, the physical age of Maitreya?
Well, he can look like anything. That's the point. So it's very difficult to say. He can look like a man, a woman, an old man, an old woman, a child, whatever form he wants to take, he can take. But normally, if you were to see him normally, he is a young man. He is very tall, 6'3", and he can, as I say, make himself look like anybody else. I'll tell you a story to illustrate this. The two women, mother and daughter, Belgian people, who came to London and got on a bus, and they were followed onto the bus by a man who sat exactly opposite them, and they looked up and they nudged each other, because they know me, and they nudged each other and they looked and they said, that man was the image of Benjamin Krim. Same hair, same face, same clothes even, just looked exactly like me, except that he was black. Now, I'm white, I'm not black, but that was the only difference, and that was Maitreya.
I vacillate quite a bit about my feelings about the return of Jesus. I've studied many religions and theologies. Are you familiar with BOTA, Builders of the Atium? Metaphysical studies. And so, interestingly enough, my significant other is very much a fundamentalist Christian, and he weekly tells me that Jesus is coming back. And today he told me, just before I left, Jesus is coming back within 10 years, if not sooner. So to hear this, I'm saying, well, maybe I should delay my time here in L.A. or continue my time in L.A. overnight to see you tomorrow. Are you speaking about more than what you're speaking about tonight on the radio?
I'm speaking about the return to the Christ of the world, the reasons for it, and the implications of it, the results of it, and how it will change the world for the better. Yes, that's what I'll be talking about.
Palma, we thank you for the call. If you're online, you can access Benjamin's webpage, which is www.share-international.org. Share-international.org. And that will be a website that you will find not only quite interesting, but very worthwhile to spend some time on. Well, here we are at this portion. And I appreciate so much you coming down tonight and spending some time with us in this late and early morning hour. I love you a great deal. It's always wonderful to see you. And anything that you feel compelled to share in closing, be it brief, be it lengthy, feel free to do so.
Thank you, Frank. You're most kind. I think the best thing if I ask Maitreya to release his blessing to the listeners. If he says something, that's an added bonus. I don't know whether he will or not. Shall I do that?
That would be wonderful.
Right. My friends, you will see me very soon. Some of you are afraid of my coming. But I say to you, be not afraid, for I love you, each one, now and always. My heart is filled with God's love for you all.
Thank you, Benjamin.
Thank you.
You're welcome.